Built Not Born, episode 135. Hey everyone, it's Joe Chicarone. Thank you for joining us. Today's guest is Huron Gracie. Huron Gracie is the head instructor, along with his brother Henner, at Gracie University in Torrance, California. Huron is the eldest grandson of Elio Gracie, the creator of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, and the eldest son of Horion Gracie, the creator of the UFC. Today, Huron and I discuss how to thrive in adversity, how to create a survival mindset, and the evolution that led Huron and his brother Henner to create Gracie Combatives 2.0. Huron also tells a story he says he's never told before about the time he lived with his grandfather Elio on his ranch in Brazil and their time training at a local BJJ academy. I also left in a little bit of our pre-talk before we start the podcast. Huron just started dropping jiu-jitsu knowledge as soon as we got on, and I wanted to include that in the episode. Huron is such a great guy. He's just so well thought out. He has an amazing perspective. Just love running ideas by him about training, jiu-jitsu, longevity, staying on the mat, mindset, how to deal with adversity. So many ideas that people can benefit from. So I hope you enjoy. If you like what you hear, please hit that follow button, or better yet, share this episode with a friend. We have a bunch of cool interviews like this one to come. Enjoy my conversation with Huron Gracie as we discuss Gracie Combatives 2.0. And remember, life is built, not born. Good to see you.
Timing worked out well.
Timing's perfect. I know how busy you are, and I appreciate you coming on. Thanks so much.
I'm happy to be here.
Before we get started, I got to show my setup here. So the mat's in the background, right? Mm-hmm. This got us through COVID.
So I love it.
Here we go. We got this from the academy. Boom. Bought this from their website. We got the 10x10 mats. And
look, I have a mat right there. Look.
Oh, that's awesome. So good.
The floor right there.
That's so good.
It's just one piece. Oh, I got to put both down.
So great. It saved me during COVID, right? Because you were all locked in our house and you guys were doing those online classes, right? You guys went virtual for a while.
Yes.
Anyway, so good. The new course is amazing. The Combatives 2.0 is amazing. I would love to talk combatives, how you guys created it, what your thought process was. Your first version, I think, saved my jiu-jitsu career.
I love it.
Yeah, like I'll get into that. And my son, Luca, who's 19, never wanted to train ever. And then during COVID, I started doing some online videos for our school here in Philly. And he was my dummy about two sessions in. He's like, can I learn this? And I'm like, well, how do I teach him? We're locked in our house. And I'm like, you know what? It's already done, combatives. And we went through the original combatives like three times in like a year. And it was awesome. And he just got his blue belt. So it's so cool.
I love it. So I love talking about combatives. Combatives is so important. It's mastering combatives is what we do as black belts. Right. The world thinks that you need to continue to learn more and new and more and new, but you need to really master the basics. Right. This is something that everybody who's Hajar just talked about this recently, get really good at the basics. And there, of course, there are nuanced moves that can surprise somebody, but just how important the basics are in terms of longevity, sustainability, safety, practicality. There's so much there to talk about in terms of, it's almost like, I guess I have a little bit of an excitement to talk about how the world wants more, more, more. And combatives is a little bit revised.
Yeah.
There are small adjustments and a couple of little lessons here or there. It's not so much new content. It's just presented better.
Yep.
It's filmed in higher quality.
We'll get going. All right, Huron, I appreciate you. Here we go. Huron Gracie, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Joe. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, great
again, and see you again.
Oh, great to see you. For those wanting to get to know Huron and his background a little bit more, and all the great stuff they got going on at Gracie University. Send you back to Built Not Born, episode number 63, which featured Huron. We called it Mindset, Willpower, and the Present Moment. Huron joined us back in September of 2022. Today, Huron is with us to talk about something I am so excited about, the release of Gracie Combatives 2.0. Huron, I'll start off with a question. Could you give us the backstory, how the original Gracie Combatives came to be? What is it? And then how you and Henner decide to evolve it to 2.0. Take it from there.
I love it. Okay. So years ago, maybe 20 years ago, we kind of took over in teaching the classes at the Gracie Academy. Henner and I were teaching it, 17, 18, 19 years old. And so, this is 20 plus years ago. And we taught for many years the way that we kind of grew up learning, where it was very informal. The instructor would just kind of show up. Hey, guys, how are you? What do you feel like working on today? And there would be 7 to 10 to 25 students in a class. And someone would say, I want to work on this. Someone would say, I want to work on that. And they would give different little opinions here and there. And we would, okay, we'll do a little of that. We'll try to do this. And we would not be able to answer every question, but we would try to accommodate everybody. It got to a point, Henner and I were together, and I said, Henner, we should do something where the first 30 minutes of every hour and a half long class, we only teach like 10, 15 of the most basic things, like a guard pass, mount control, side mount control, side mount escape, like very basic things for the first 30 minutes. And then the final hour, people who are more experienced would show up and they would join. So if they've already been there for like 4 or 5 months, they would come at the half an hour in. But those that have less than, 20, 30 classes would come for the first 30 minutes. And Henner was like, I think he chewed on it for a little bit, but then he said, no, let's just do the whole class of, let's do a bigger curriculum, not 15 classes. Let's do like, let's say, or 30 plus techniques, more of a curriculum. And so then I'm like, well, great. Now, this was already being done at the Valente Brothers in Florida. Mm-hmm. They had already done a curriculum for their kind of fundamentals class. It was already happening, and they had suggested it to us. So it's not like it was our idea, like just out of zero to have a curriculum. Obviously, there have been curriculums forever. My grandfather used a curriculum, but it was a private class curriculum. Mm-hmm. So the tricky part is a curriculum in a group class. Mm-hmm. And that's something that the Valente Brothers were doing very well. And we had heard about it probably a couple of years before, but you kind of hear it, like, I don't know about that. So even though they had said it and it was their idea, it's almost like we had to come to it on our own. Mm-hmm. And just be like, hold on, everybody stop. We got to do something. So then we started putting techniques together, and Gracie Combatives was born. And that was probably 16, 17, 18 years ago. And then we taught it for a little while, and then we filmed this amazing course, Gracie Combatives. And that's the first version, which did great. And we've had amazing feedback, and we were able to use that course for instructors of ours around the world at our certified training centers that teach jujitsu. They would use that course to teach, to mirror what Gracie Academy at the time was teaching. Yep. And it allowed them, it allowed people that were blue belts and purple belts to have 70, 80, 100, 250 plus students, which is kind of unheard of that someone that is a blue or purple belt has so many students, especially in an area where there might be other black belts. Mm-hmm. 10 minutes away, 20 minutes away. But that's because the curriculum is so well designed. It's not that it's linear, but you can learn any one of the 36 lessons. And I say 36, that's how it's taught online. Mm-hmm. It's actually 23 lessons, standing and ground techniques combined. Mm-hmm. It's 23 lessons in this course of Gracie Combatives. So people could drop into a class for class number 4 in a group class, for example, and it would be no problem. They can drop in class number 10 on their first day. It's no problem because every class was taught to the brand new students. So no previous experience is necessary to jump in on any class, which made it easier now to teach in a group class setting, because you have people who show up every day of the week. Someone's coming in to try their first class. Mm-hmm. So they need to be comfortable and feel taken care of, even if they show in on class number 19, for example. Mm-hmm. So our school was doing it. We had a couple schools around the country starting to do it. Norfolk, Virginia, Bill Odom was like the pilot certified training center of ours that started teaching Gracie Combatives and had huge success. And then we've been teaching it for years, 15, 16 years. And 15 years ago is when we released the DVD set, and it went online a couple of years later. Mm-hmm. But before that, we were still teaching it. And it's interesting how teaching jujitsu classes is something that for some people can begin to feel monotonous, mm-hmm. especially when you're kind of being told what to teach and kind of how to teach it. Because it's the same Americana armbar, or it's the same elbow escape from the mount. And jujitsu instructors have this need to like express themselves and be free and teach what they want and somewhat impress the students and show what works for them and give their little touch, mm-hmm. which I agree, we all have that need. But there's something that's more important than that, and that is structure, consistency, very practical techniques, mm-hmm. self-defense mindset, right? There's a consistency is something that people really appreciate. You just know every day you go to class, there's a class outline. Every day we're going to review and we're going to see things again. So there's a cyclic nature of the classes. So Gracie Combatives and the way it was structured is offering things that the students need. Mm-hmm. So now we have to find the balance between what the student needs and what the instructor wants, which is to express themselves and to, you know, let their own personality out in their teaching. And fortunately for us, we believe that's very possible and we are capable of doing that. Mm-hmm. All of our instructors teach the classes just the way they're supposed to be taught, but they all have their own personalities and their own energy. And they bring that to the class. And we've had tremendous feedback, all kinds of feedback of instructors saying, because of the structure of Gracie Combatives, they actually feel more free. And there's like a weight lifted off of their chest when it comes to teaching classes. So this is from the instructor's point of view.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to think about what you're going to teach.
Yeah.
You don't have to make it up on the spot. There's a schedule and it's already laid out for you. So both the students and the instructors, everybody knows it's all online and you're learning it in class. You can refer to the videos online. So it's an amazing machine. After we've been teaching it for so many years, we were like getting better at presenting the techniques. Mm-hmm. And then we thought, you know what? Well, we got to film this. We got to film it high definition. We need to present this a little bit better. We did one camera. We did it a little bit closer. It's a little bit more well lit. We're closer to the camera. It's just one angle. So all of our years in practice, we say, you know what? Let's do it again. And once again, I think people who loved Gracie Combatives, the original, they're like, this is so much better. Thank you. Uh-huh. I'm getting all kinds of amazing feedback that this is better than the first one, which is very important because the first one is always the best one in most cases.
Absolutely. So here's my history with the first one. Started training back in Philly with Steve Maxwell, right? Mm-hmm. I got my blue belt. Phil Miglerice gave me my blue belt at Maxercise with Steve. And then I had a kid, bought a house, moved out of the city. I took 6 years off, like didn't touch jiu-jitsu. Got my blue belt like 2.5 years in, got my blue belt 6 years. Then I went back to balance with Phil and Rick. I just jumped into, I'm a blue belt. I jumped into the advanced class, just was getting destroyed. There was butterfly hooks and there was Della Kivas, things I just never saw before, like 7 years before. All right, the art evolved. And I was like, I'm ready to quit. Like, I'm just like so embarrassed. Everyone's tapping me out. And Drew Vogel, our buddy, pulled me aside and said, you got to go back to the basics, man. So he pulled me aside, come to the basics class. So he basically taught me. I took some privates with him. He taught me the combatives. And then I saw the combatives online and I'm like, I bought it instantly, probably watched it 10 times. Easy. Mm-hmm. Start to finish, slice by slice, drilling, changed my game, saved my jiu-jitsu career, the 1-0. Like all the little details is crazy that you think, oh, I know the Americana. Oh, I know the armbar. I think John Kavanaugh, Conor McGregor's head coach, mentions online, he goes, Gracie Combatives 2.0 is so frustrating because there's basic details in these moves that I should know by now. And like he mentioned, like there's basic things that you're pointing out that he's like, wow, like this is so, you can get so creative with the basics. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I guess what allows for that kind of growth in the basics is hanging out with the basics. Mm-hmm. The more time you spend teaching and practicing and applying and using the basic techniques, you discover things, techniques are discovered, details are discovered. So my grandfather, for example, like he was such a basic person, but he was so good the basics. And he never, like, I never remember my grandfather trying to impress me with something that was complex. Mm-hmm. Like my whole life, all he ever did was impress me with something that was so simple and so basic, like a shifting of your weight or an adjusting of your hand. And he, remember, this is somebody who's been around jiu-jitsu for so long. So he's exposed to so much. It's from students showing him things, his kids showing him things, but he was so, so simple and so effective and practical, and everything was about being efficient and leverage-based and self-defense mindset and conserving energy. So it kind of infected me. Now, when I think about jiu-jitsu, I think about Gracie Combatives. Like there are obviously moves that I use beyond Gracie Combatives, but I want to master the basics. I just released like maybe a year ago, a course just on the trap and roll escape.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's the first lesson number one, mm-hmm. is a takedown and then a mount escape. And the mount escape is the trap and roll escape. And that's lesson number one in our house, in our classes at Gracie University. And the fact that I could do so much content on one move, a trap and roll, and it means so much to me. It just shows how much time I spend on the bottom of the mount, mm-hmm. trying to make the first move we teach every student work on everybody. I try to make it work on someone who obviously who has no experience. It's very easy, but then mm-hmm. someone who's a blue belt, a purple belt, brown belt, black belt. So who in the world can I have mount on me and I can apply the trap and roll? So that's me trying to master the basics. That's me trying to master Gracie Combatives.
Mm-hmm. What, just looking out through jiu-jitsu in general, like all the online instructionals, just Instagram, going to different academies, there seems to be a global trend of like more complexity, more inversion. So much of it now is they're not worried about strikes. Where you see people in tournaments where they jump a triangle and someone lifts them up and they stay there and they keep trying to choke the person as they're lifted. People are letting people pick them up from the guard. Like that moving away from the basics, you kind of see that a little bit in some BJJ realm.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
So I think there's two conversations here. One is the fact that no doubt there's a mindset of self-defense. And most people think that self-defense is just, okay, someone's throwing punches, we have to be able to defend punches. But there are many components of self-defense. For example, positional control. Just being able to control somebody very well can help you defend yourself. Mm-hmm. You can protect your family and yourself by keeping someone who's a threat underneath you. So good positional controls, which that's something that maybe in the competition realm is practice because they're scoring points. They're maintaining control to score a point, but it can also translate to keeping someone down to protect yourself. Another thing is energy conservation, which that in a competition is not considered because it's a time limit. It could be 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 minutes. There's a pace that people go at with no consideration for what they will feel like 5, 6, 7 minutes down the road. Now, in a street fight, that's dangerous because if you go, 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 yes, you could win the fight, let's just say 85, 95% of the time. But there's a small chance that if you give everything you have in the first, you know, 5, 6 minutes, if you go to destroy the person and dominate them, now you're tired and then you didn't win the fight. And all of a sudden, now you're on the bottom of the fight. So energy conservation is something that we don't necessarily think about when we say self-defense. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like, it's kind of forgotten about. Now, and as well as how practical are your movements? So when we think self-defense in a competition realm where you're full of energy and you have your grips, you're strong, you're good to go, it makes sense that a technique might be a little more complex to get underneath somebody, to off balance them, to score a few points and get a dominant position. But not to mention, obviously, that in some competitions we use gi, some are no gi, but there's a complexity, and there's like you can drill a certain reversal or a sweep for months and months and months and years and years and years, and then you make it work one time and it was worth it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe you neglect some positions that might be very important when it comes to your survivability, because all you really care about is getting out from underneath, controlling somebody, scoring a point, and then going for a toe hold, let's say, or a leg lock. Mm-hmm. So the conversation of training in a way that has a self-defense mindset that thinks about the fact that somebody can attack you in the real world. Mm-hmm. And what matters to you is not necessarily scoring 3 points or getting on top of them. What matters is staying safe. It's avoiding defeat. Mm-hmm. For 15 seconds, for 2 minutes, for 3 minutes. It's being able to get up and get away and just stay safe. Yeah. And we know that if you're in a real fight, right, the adrenaline that exists in a real fight is a little bit different because your life is on the line. One mistake, somebody punches you, you're knocked out. Now you're on the ground unconscious and they're standing over you. It's very dangerous. Yeah. Compared to in a competition, you're much safer. You're on a mat. There are referees. There are people, spectators. There's a sportsmanship. There's a care. There's a respect. So the adrenaline that exists in a real fight, that alone can potentially, like, it takes you from being full of energy to the moment you make contact with someone, you're already tired. So 2 minutes in a real fight feels like 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I've got all kinds of feedback from students of ours, whether they're law enforcement or they're civilians who've been in fights and had to hand on with someone. And they're like, I felt like I was fighting for 9 minutes, but it was just 90 seconds. And it's on video, for example. That's how tired they were.
Yeah.
So the basic techniques that have the least amount of demand on your body, movements, they're very simple. Those are the ones that are most likely going to help you in a street fight. Just hold the person, understand your positioning. So very much simplifying fighting is how you get in a fight. The person that you're fighting that knows nothing, they're going to bring randomness. Mm-hmm. And they're going to go crazy and twist and turn and kick. You have to be the glue and the weight and the control, and you're the breath of the fight.
Yep.
You're taking breaths, right? You're the awareness. They're the crazy. Whereas in the competition realm, it's like even amongst friends when you spar jujitsu, sometimes people shake hands and they just, it's like two squirrels fighting.
It's crazy, yeah.
Which that's fun to do. We all love to do that. But when I shake someone's hand or someone attacks me in a fight and I make contact, I don't want to be go, 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 go. I want to be slow, hold, breathe, control, safety, distance management, punch protection, energy efficiency, safety, safety, safety. Yeah. And then after 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes, okay, this person's getting tired. I have an opportunity. I can submit them. I can get up and get away. I can run to safety because just getting away is victory because I'm safe. I protected myself.
Yeah, that goes to what you said a few times in the course. Like the most important thing is survivability. So it's just survival. Like it's like the self-defense aspect, the ability to be able to defend yourself from someone who's bigger, stronger, faster, younger, more flexible. Yes. But you could sit there for 5 minutes, 6 minutes and not get submitted. I mean, that's a dub, right?
And yes, 100%. And you can practice this survivability every day with your friends when you practice jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. Because when you shake someone's hand and you grapple with a friend, it's not like we're throwing strikes every day at Gracie University. maybe 1 or 2 days a week, we can train with one person wearing gloves and we're striking very lightly so that we can become, we're very aware of where punches can come from, right? When to expect punches based on the positioning of the two bodies. And you understand distance very well, but you can't punch every day all the time because it is a little bit more stressful and there is an energy, there's a tension that happens. So once in a while, it's nice, you know, like we do 75, 80% of the time, we will just grapple. But when we're grappling, when you grapple, I think I have to tap you out, Joe, in like, you know, as fast as possible. If that's how I'm thinking, that thought process rolls over into other areas of your life. So if you get into a street fight, or if you're in a conversation with somebody, there's like this need to like get your point across as fast as possible and be right as fast as possible and say what you have to say and not listen to what they're saying. So there's this urgency that exists in the grappling jiu-jitsu that I feel it's like even when you drive in the street, how in a hurry are you to get to wherever you're going? We obviously all have places that we need to get in a rush sometimes. But in most cases, like when you drive, when I drive my car, there's zero rush. I'm just moving from A to B. And B could take me 2 minutes, which let's say that's submitting someone, to take me 10 minutes. If there's traffic, there's traffic. It's what it is. So there's like an acceptance that the goal is not, there's an acceptance, there's an agreeance that I'm not trying to tap this person out that I'm grappling with. I'm trying to move with them through positions, increase my understanding of the positions that I might possibly land in. And if a submission presents itself, I'll take it. If it doesn't, I might just simply defend myself. I might control that person for the majority of the round. So they're all victories. And this matters because one day when you are 45, 55, 60 years old, 65 years old, you might still want to be around jiu-jitsu. My grandfather, Elio Gracie, was around jiu-jitsu in his 90s. And he found a way to continue to practice and play jiu-jitsu. And what he would do is he would do very specific drills. For example, somebody come over here and mount on me. Or let me mount on you. And I'll try to choke you. And you defend your neck and I'll attack your neck. So these small little games within a position of jiu-jitsu, which it was much easier on his body. And it's overall, it's safer for someone who's 90 plus years old. And he gets to really sharpen and kind of hone in on one skill. So when we train, when we spar at our academy here at Gracie University here in Torrance, I try to explain to the students, don't be too concerned about this go, go, go mindset. Make it to where you get into a position and give that position some time and some energy. It could be a minute and a half. And then tomorrow, put yourself there again and experience it again. So students who are 25, 35 years old are already doing this very specific training of one position that my grandfather was doing in his 90s. I'm trying to teach them. Become fascinated with perfecting one aspect of the game. The problem is submissions are so appealing. Like tapping someone out is so cool. It's so, if you feel so good, it's so empowering. So the trick is to learn to feel the reward, the same level of reward that I feel if I choke Henner. I feel if I'm able to control him under my side control for like 45 seconds, if he tries to escape 3 or 4 times, if I can keep my brother down 3 or 4 times, I it's such a huge accomplishment. It's as exciting as armbarring him. And that's because I know how good he is and how difficult it is to control him. And by making that a victory in my mind, think about what I'm doing like every week, how I'm focusing on controlling all the blue belts, purple belts, brown belts. I'm preparing for him or another black belt. It could There are many people that are very hard to control. The point is you work on the small parts, and that's, so this is all by way of saying like your definition of victory, which yep. I might've talked about before. The definition of victory is, there are many definitions of victory, and how simple you are. People might think, oh, this move is so simple. The question is, it is simple. It's a simple move. Who can you apply that simple move to?
That's a great point. In the past, you've been really big with the playful mindset. Keep it playful. Doing some research for this, I was looking back at my files. You sent this back a couple of years back.
Yeah.
Let's go, right?
I love it.
So like the playful mindset. So you have the one mindset where the jiu-jitsu practitioner, the bell goes off, the timer goes off, you have the 5-minute round, they just try to kill each other. They're like in a UFC fight and they're on the mat for open mat. Then you flip it to the other side. You have maybe another mindset of, hey, I might try to control this person for 30 seconds, but then maybe give them some space to move, operate, and maybe they reverse it. Then I'm on the bottom.
Yeah.
So what's the benefit? Say someone's like, Huron, you're crazy. I'm in jiu-jitsu. I'm here to tap everyone in the room. Compared to what's the benefit of, hey, let's play jiu-jitsu. Let's get into some maybe disadvantaged positions on purpose. Yeah. To learn how to respond to them. Like, what's the advantage of keeping it playful to cap the room out?
The understanding that no matter where you are, there is something to learn. So be aware of how much you resist positions.
Okay.
I don't have any positions that I resist, meaning there's nowhere that I land and my reaction is like, ugh, I don't want to be here. That doesn't mean that I don't fight to avoid people's advancement. People might want to advance. I mean, I can fight to avoid it because that's part of maintaining control.
Yep.
But at the same time, once they have overcome my control and they advance their position, there's an immediate acceptance. And once you've accepted it, you can begin to study it. If you have not accepted the position that the person has achieved of dominance, then you cannot really study it because you're still in this kind of fight or flight. I shouldn't be down here. I got to get out of here mindset.
Yep.
So you're not really present. You're not going to absorb all there is to be absorbed in that new position. So it can't really be argued anymore. 15 years ago, which you probably remember, there was an energy of like, oh, this is a man's game. You can't be playful. Mm-hmm. This is fighting. This is badass.
Yeah.
You know, this is a fighting art. So there was energy of like how playful is not good. And that came from people who were much older than me, from a generation where it was proving era. They had to fight everybody and beat everybody up. But this is a generation of learning. Mm-hmm. And teaching and spreading, because people more than ever want to learn jiu-jitsu. The question is, can they find a place that's safe for them to learn, that has a good environment, that's safe psychologically and physically safe for the student? And that's very hard to find these days. But instructors around the world are realizing the importance of beginner programs. They're realizing the importance of encouraging their students to be a little more lighthearted. And they, for example, the Danahar Death Squad, all those guys that train, you know, who are in the competition realm that are taking over right now. From what I understand, it's very common that they start sparring matches in inferior positions. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Of course, why would you start neutral standing? Why would you waste the opportunity of starting neutral? You might as well put yourself in the worst position all the time to build familiarity with the most uncomfortable, disadvantageous positions. This is something that they're genius.
Yeah.
Now, this is something that my grandfather was talking about when I was a kid. Because he forced me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So now I hope that, you know, that John Danahar took that. I can imagine that he kind of stumbled across that himself because he's so smart, but I can imagine that he also heard maybe myself, maybe another Gracie, maybe he saw something, maybe he saw a Gracie, maybe he saw Hanzo training one time and Hanzo was constantly training, being underneath somebody who's trying to knock him out. Mm-hmm. And then he sees that and says, oh my gosh, if you do that for an MMA fight, if you prepare to not get knocked out, mm-hmm. why not prepare to not get submitted? So yeah. it just makes sense. So you can see that it's being accepted more and more and more every day. And if you tell someone, you know what, don't be overly concerned with having control of your training partner every single day. Instead, every other day, put yourself underneath them and spend 2 minutes down there before you escape.
Yeah.
Genius. I mean, it doesn't take someone who's even a new student. If you explain the reason why we do this is so that we can build comfort
yep.
in the positions that are the most disadvantageous for us. They're going to say, oh, wow. Yeah, you're right. We do want to build comfort there. Even though we want to avoid it if we can, we also know that we can't guarantee that we will never land there.
And one, comfort builds confidence, right? So you have the comfort there, it builds confidence. And like you said, we can't guarantee we'll never land there. Like you're 25, you're 35, you're a beast, you got quick legs, you're flexible. Maybe no one passes your guard for the first 10 years. Maybe you're that beast in the academy that you're 10 yes. years, you're no one ever passed your guard and you're not in side control. But let's just say you, like you said, you want to be like your grandfather. You want to do this, you're 85, 95 years old. At some point between 45 and like 70, someone's going to pass your guard. The new 25-year-old is going to be coming through the gym. And if you haven't been in side control in 20 years, you're either A, a white belt in side control, or yes. B, you're going to quit. Because like, oh my God, everyone's passing my guard now. I'm worth like, your whole like mindset is the alpha. No one can beat me. But mm-hmm. you know, if you're not comfortable in that, it's just like, it's not forever then. It's for that 10-year period.
Yes.
You're the alpha, right?
Yes, I have a very interesting story. I've never told it before. So, when I was in Brazil, I don't think I've told this story before. When I was in Brazil, I had spent 6 months at my grandfather's house in Brazil. There was a local jiu-jitsu school down the street. He had never gone there before, but he had known about it. And it was, you know, kind of distantly tied through the family. This brown belt taught jujitsu at this in the strip mall, kind of top floor, second floor. So my grandfather said, Hino, let's go over there and let's just go let you sweat a little bit. Because we were training him and I together on his mat in his house. But now let's go train at this jujitsu school so you can kind of put everything you learned to the test. So we go to this school, we show up, and there's an instructor there with a brown belt and maybe like 8-10 other students. I do the class. The instructor, of course, knows who my grandfather is, welcomes me right in. I do the class. And so it's about an hour class, let's say 45, 50 minutes. And then there's a rolling session of 20, 30 minutes. And my grandfather asked the instructor to roll with me. I'm a purple belt and he's the brown belt instructor. We rolled. For, I want to say there were like maybe 8 or 10 minute rounds. Who knows? But a good round. And he wasn't able to submit me, which obviously is something that that's all we were working on, you know, the 3 years and years before that. But, you know, for the 2 weeks I was already in Brazil before I went there, same thing every day, defense, bottom side mount, bottom mount, just stay safe.
Yep.
So now this guy doesn't beat me.
Mm-hmm.
The class ends. I shake everybody's hand. Thank you so much. Boom. I come back. I think it's like Monday, Wednesday, Friday training, 3 days a week. I come back on Wednesday. I'm in my gi. My grandfather sits down. Everyone's there. The instructor is wearing street clothes. He didn't wear his gi again. And that happened again the next day and the next day and the next day. He didn't put his jiu-jitsu gi back on for the next, I was there for 6 months. So I would say for like 3 months, the first 3 months, because I went pretty soon at the beginning of my trip, for 3 months, he didn't wear a gi.
Okay.
Because he did not want to train with me again.
Real?
Yes. He came every day. He wasn't wearing a cast. He wasn't limping. He didn't have an infection, a staph infection. He just didn't want to grapple with me again. And that's because he's a brown belt and I'm a purple belt. So because he wasn't able to overcome me and submit me and dominate me, it was scary for him. It was too risky to even put his gi on in the presence of Eddie Gracie and his students. Remember, he's at 8, 10, 15 students there, you know, that now they're going to see him not beat me. Do you understand? So it's safer to talk and teach in street clothes and not step on the mat.
Wow.
Now, this is the reason why, see, for example, this is the reason why you need to have more definitions of victory. This is the reason why you need to work on bottom side mount, bottom mount, defense, worst case scenarios. Because one day I would probably dominate him because he was more or less dominating me, attacking and I'm defending. I'll probably dominate him. The question is he ready for my offense? Not if he's not studying the positions again and again and again. So it was kind of sad, but it was also a good lesson. It's an eye-opening experience. And it was really cool because my grandfather, just to show the kind of person he was, how he's selfish and he's selfless, like all of us, which is very important. So my grandfather selfishly said, hey, everybody come to my house. You can come train at my house because the school closed. The school, it was just like literally a mat in a little rented area. So he maybe stopped paying the rent. The school closed. So for the last 2 months that I was in Brazil on my 6-month trip, everybody came to my grandfather's house. I think they went and trained somewhere else. There's another mat somewhere, which I went as well for another instructor. But on the off days, he kind of, maybe there wasn't as much training in that other spot. He said, come once a week to train at our house. So for 2 months, we had the group there once a week, like 6, 7, 8 guys would come and train at my grandfather's ranch. And it was probably nighttime, like around, I would say 5, 6 p.m. And every night after we trained, he would make these drinks, like these smoothies for everybody.
That's awesome.
I'm talking like jackfruit, acai, like, you know, guava, watermelon, like different smoothies, different combinations. He'd make these fruit juices for 6, 7, 8 guys. Of course, not only are we sparring, everybody's sparring with me, but he's teaching them jujitsu. These guys are, they're not paying a dollar. They're just coming to hang out and they're learning every Tuesday, let's just say. It might have even been twice a week. But what an experience that they just happened to be invited because the grandson was in town, because I'm in town. So he wanted to help me.
Yeah.
But I think the 7, 8 guys that went there every week, they did not feel like, oh my gosh, we're being used to help Hidom. No, they were grateful for the instruction. They were grateful for the experience, the conversations, the mindset. They were grateful for even the rolling with me. They probably appreciated it because there's an intensity that I was bringing to these guys. They're all blue belts, purple belts. And they got dinner at the end of the night.
Crazy. I think someone's still telling that story in Brazil. I mean, not only did they train with the grandmaster, they were invited to his house, had like personal instruction, and he made him dinner.
I mean, how many people went there once a week to do that? I mean, he had a couple of private class students here and there, but what a great time. And a couple, one of the guys I actually kind of see once in a while on social media. So it's just too cool.
So cool. You spent 6 months there with your grandfather. That'd be such a formidable part of your life. What's like, if you had to boil down what you learned from your grandfather in a sentence or two, but everything he taught you, what would it be?
Holy moly. In a sentence or two?
Or a couple sentences. I mean, there's probably so much. Like, how would you describe what he taught you, what you learned from him?
What did I learn from my grandfather in a sentence or two? There's so much. I mean, I tend to start with, you know, I don't defeat my opponents. They defeat themselves. Which that allows you to just step onto the mat, step into the ring, step in, you know, start, get into a fight. I'm not here to beat you. I'm here to defend myself, exist in this fight. And if you defeat yourself, great. If you don't, great. So I don't beat you, you lose. And There's the other one, which is, if you do not lose, you can only win. Mm-hmm. If you don't lose, you can only win. So he saw that as a draw is a win. A draw is a win. And I had students, I shake a student's hand sometimes, I roll with our students, and some students just really want to tap me out. And I'm like, you're a purple belt, you're a blue belt. Like, they really fight hard to tap me. It's okay. I had that phase as well. But fortunately, while I had that phase and I was a blue belt, purple belt, I also, one day a week, you know, when my grandfather was around for a couple months, month or two here or there, I would be reminded of how that's fun to do sometimes, but we need to also do this. And that is the training, surviving, defending.
I think that was really on display. That survivability is a win. I remember back in the day at Metamorphs when you took on Galval.
Yeah.
And then people were floored that you weren't tapped out. They thought it was going to go a minute, 2 minutes. Like, you took that fight like really quick. Like, it wasn't, not that you had a lot, I don't recall the time frame, but you took it kind of quick and you weren't tapped out and people were floored.
Yeah, that wasn't that quick. That was like a month or two. Josh Barnett was
The Barnett one was quick.
Like 4 days.
But the Galval one, they were for sure, because he was like tops in the world then. Like, he was probably number one in the world at the time. And then, like, you survived. And then people were floored that you weren't submitted there.
Yeah. Here's what happens too. It's like, well, you need to understand, when it comes to not getting submitted, it's not that difficult. All that is required is a shift in mindset. And the most important mindset is, I don't defeat my opponents, they defeat themselves. Mm-hmm. Because if you have this idea that you have to defeat your opponent, you will inevitably expose yourself. You will burn energy. So this idea of like going after someone, even though it can result in you submitting them, it also results in you exposing yourself.
Now, I think
your defense is the weakest. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to, like, I have purple belts sometimes that I'm like, man, like, if I beat them once here or there is one thing, but they should be at a point where it's very hard to submit them, because their priority should be defense. You know, at least sometime they should learn all of my submissions. Obviously, there are some people who are amazing and they have a few submissions that they just catch everybody in. Mm-hmm. But in general, like, if you're visiting a jiu-jitsu school in Thailand and you roll with a black belt and you're a purple belt, you could take it two ways. You could try to submit that black belt, or you could say, you know what? I'm going to keep my elbows tucked in, kind of hands near my neck. I'm going to observe what they're doing. I'm going to watch them. So me not losing to Andre Galvan is not impressive. What is impressive is that as I've grown up, I have let go of this idea that I need to beat people. Mm-hmm. And that was possible because of my grandfather's influence.
That's phenomenal. I think you mentioned in the Law of Human Nature in the intro to the Combatives 2.0, you think you said, when you fall on the ground, don't become your worst enemy. And that's with that whole mindset of taking care of the defensive side. Don't do something crazy because you don't want to be in a certain position. Kind of flow with it. Be playful.
Yeah. Yeah. We say that if you're uncomfortable on your back, you will give your back. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the law of human nature, is that people are just not, they don't lay in a horizontal plane except for to sleep.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So everyone's just, get up, get out of here, go. So you're, because you're not comfortable on your back, you end up turning and giving your back to your opponent. And that's very dangerous. Yeah. 100%.
How about this? I know your time is limited. I was wondering, to wrap up, a couple of fun rapid fire questions for you. Is that cool with you?
Do it. Yeah.
First one, what purchase of $100 or less has most positively impacted your life?
What purchase of $100 or less? Let's just say I have two. So I purchased a game the other day with my kids, a little card game.
Yeah.
Rat-a-tat-cat. Like the my kids like it so much. So the fun that we have with this game, and that's just, there are so many other games, I'm sure. But if you can have buy something that's cheap and you have kids to play with your kids, killer. Yeah, and then I also have this, I bought a phone case recently. It's I actually have the laptop one right here. You see that? It's for my whole laptop. It's a Faraday bag. So it's from a company called Silent, S-L-N-T. And I basically have a little phone case and I put my phone in it. And then my phone blacks out, meaning my wife doesn't know where I am on Life 360, on whatever, Apple, find your friends, you know. No one calls me. There's no service. Nothing travels in and out of the phone. So I put it, my phone in this, and I put that thing in my pocket. It's a little bit big for some of my, but overall my shorts, it fits perfect.
Okay.
And it's the sleeve that my phone exists in, and I'm completely off the grid. Now, I like that for two reasons. One, I don't like the transmitting my phone near my groin. I don't like that. People drive, they put their phone like in between their legs, like right in their private area. I'm like, why would you do that? It's like searching Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, everything's transmitting right through your body.
No, thanks.
So that's number one. But also the process of taking your phone out and opening the flap and taking it out of the sleeve is a little bit annoying. Mm. So I go to my phone less.
That's awesome. And you just buys your freedom, peace of mind. Oh my gosh. Yeah. You're more living in the present moment, right? Like it's just awesome. How about this? What's the worst advice or trend you see in the world of BJJ now? Worst advice or trend you see taking place overall?
I would say that the trend of always wanting to learn new things and kind of offer new things and show new things and teach new fancy things. Anybody can go online and search techniques and watch something kind of complex and fancy and then teach it. I could be doing that. And I could probably teach it pretty well and understand it pretty well. Mm-hmm. But when the whole world is trying to constantly impress everybody with jiu-jitsu speed and complexity and, you know, really advanced techniques, it is very cool to see. It's entertaining. But at the same time, it is a little bit separate. It's a little disconnected from what the world needs. And that is very basic, keep yourself safe, jiu-jitsu. And that goes back to Gracie Combatives, because I'm thinking about the 95% of the world, I don't know what percentage, does not do jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. So it's important that we always remember to like stand behind simplicity and the basics. Mm-hmm. Because when we do that, the world says, oh, wow, look, that's a basic move. And, you know, it's almost like the further basic moves are shared. Like, for example, when I share a video, it might get, you know, 25,000 views, 45,000 views. But there are other videos that get 9.7 million views. Which, that's okay. It's because of the level of complexity and entertainment and speed of it. It's so cool. Even I'm like, I might watch it six times. I help those views. But for someone who's like, I want to learn to defend myself, that's not going to help them make that choice.
Yeah. So wrapping up here, if there's, say, a new student, maybe just stepped on the mat for the first time, or maybe there's like a brown or black belt, right? That's looking at Gracie Combatives 2.0. What will the new student get out of it? And what would the seasoned practitioner get out of Gracie Combatives 2.0?
I think they both are getting the exact same presentation, the exact same technique. It's not uncommon that as you train and you've been around jiu-jitsu longer and longer, especially if you're not teaching basic jiu-jitsu, that you forget some of the simplicity, some of the nuances of the techniques. So I think someone with experience is like, oh my gosh, like that small little detail. Of course, I haven't been doing that move that much, so I forgot that. Also, I think someone who's experienced might be reminded as to how that very basic move, that combatives move, mm-hmm. can potentially help them in a situation, in a position, in a training environment that is experienced. So even though it's very self-defense, it's a self-defense course, there are so many techniques that can help you in your purple brown belt level, black belt level rolling. Yep. It's not like these are moves that are only going to be applied in a fight against someone in the parking lot. I use these moves when I'm rolling against black belts, many of them.
Yep.
And for the person you ask for the beginner, right? What are they going to get from it? The new person. What the new person gets is a feeling. Mm-hmm. The feeling of being presented a situation where you have no idea what to do. You're like, oh my gosh, what would I do there? That's a pretty worst case scenario. And then you're taught the solution. And then the feeling that you have is, I can do this. Mm-hmm. I can defend myself. I can stay safe. Protect my family. I don't have to be scared.
Yeah.
I'm ready for what the world throws at me. So that feeling of confidence, and it's not just a feeling, it's in a reality. You actually have a skill now. So to go from not having any idea what you would do to an hour later, now you have an idea. Oh my gosh, it's 1 hour or even less, 30 minutes of your time.
Yep.
I had no idea to now I know.
Yeah.
It's like anything. Like I have no idea, for example, how to fix a broken refrigerator. If someone could coach me on like the most important things in like 15, 20, 30 minutes,
yeah,
man, I might do that lesson.
Yeah.
And when it comes to self-defense, we cannot argue the need. I don't care who you are. Everybody out there wants to know how to stay safe in the world.
Comfort builds confidence, right?
100%.
Last question. We talked about a bunch over the last 60 minutes. Here on, if you could have everyone listening take just one lesson away from everything we discussed, what would that lesson be?
Everybody wants to know how to defend themselves. And it's those of us that do jiu-jitsu, what can we do to help give that to them? How can we help guide them? Like, how can we hold their hand and walk them there? Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yep. Self-defense, build confidence. Huron Gracie, I'd like to thank you for joining us. If Huron, people are looking for you, Gracie Combatives, the Gracie University online, where can we find
Gracie, you? GracieUniversity.com. We will see you there.
Awesome. Huron, great to see you, my friend. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, sir. Have a great rest of your day. Everybody, all the best, everybody. Peace.